People will talk.
Gotta find myself a couple of drinks. 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 Oh. Gotta find myself a couple of drinks.
This is a red wine.
Red wine, you make
me so fine.
That's the
wine tasting 101.
This is red wine.
Red wine. I got troubles on my mind. Red wine. Make me feel so fine.
So here we are in the shop of Luke and Rocky.
Hello.
So this is a wine shop. You guys have a podcast, very cultural, very culinary. Before we get into the questions, we're having a red wine as well. So who wants to explain?
Slide into the wine.
Oh, okay.
This is red wine.
This is red wine.
So yeah, I mean, we think it would be
it's remarkably red.
It's very red and darker than my soul. So basically, this is just a little Ribera del Duero. We thought, as you are our guests, we can at least give you some booze. This is like a small winery in Ribera. This is a brand new project and they wanted us to try it. So you are actually helping us analyze this wine for the first time as well. So if you don't like it, we won't sell it.
And I want to highlight, the big brother of this wine was by, according to, I think, Wine Spectator magazine,
the best
wine of the world under $50.
Yeah. And this is the same winery. Yeah.
The big brother of this wine, not this one.
But it's a Ribera del Duero, so we're not talking about a weird region nobody's ever heard of.
Well, cheers.
Cheers. Yeah,
cheers. Well, cheers. Okay. So bottoms up.
Let's get moving. Smooth, juicy.
Oh, wow. I really like that.
It's good.
Yeah. So my palate is very basic.
That's all right.
How would you... We're here to learn today. So how would you describe the body of this or the flavor of this?
It's not too heavy compared to some Riberas. Yeah, it's only 14 from alcohol.
It's quite young. I mean, it's 9 months.
9 months in oak. This is what they would call a Roble style, which is like an unofficial style where you basically... You could put it in a barrel for one month.
The big brother is much stronger. But, I mean, it's fine.
This is what we would consider a medium to full-bodied red wine. I mean, there's no fireworks here. Yeah. This is about as Spanish as you can get. So Tempranillo. It's the kind of, it's like an elevated version of what you'll get in any Spanish bar. The Ribera, Rioja kind of
wine. That's one of the beautiful things of the Spanish wines, is that even the most humble wine in the supermarket is decent. Something that, you know, is
like France.
Exactly. So, this is, I mean, it's a... Very, very good brother of the other one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, would it be fair to say that people come off the street, they can buy wines, but also if they don't know a lot about wines, there's tastings here. They can speak to board of you, and they leave.
We prefer they don't speak to us. we do daily tastings. So it was 12:31. We have one at 5. Mm-hmm. We have one at 7. I also have a sherry tasting at 7. Yeah. But the thing we do like is when people actually ask us things, because the problem is, most people, and the average person doesn't really know what they know or what they like or what there is in Spain, but they've tried Ribera and Rioja. So we like it when people come with questions. Sometimes people come in a bit like, oh, hola. And they're like, what can we do? They're like, red wine? You're like, what do you like to drink? What are you eating? All these kind of fun. So we try and help people out. I mean, whether if they're buying a 6 euro Rioja or they're buying a 100 euro wine, we want them to leave with like the wine that they think or they hope they've come in to get, if that makes sense. So we try and talk about with our, you know, customers about wine as much as we can, but we have these tastings where the average sort of tourist usually can come in for a little bit and have a little fun, boozy learning about the basics as well.
So on Thursdays we have our weekly theme tasting. It's more focused for really the English speaking community of Madrid.
We do allow Spanish people.
Okay.
And every week we choose a different topic, and then we have recurring wine tastings, like our cava versus champagne. It's a blind tasting. It's a very fun tasting. You taste 4 wines, 2 of them are cavas, 2 of them are champagne. You have to guess which is which.
Everyone got it.
We have the wine and cheese one. We invite wineries. Yes. Those tastings go more for the, you know, for the more established.
Yeah.
English speaking community of Madrid. But also we have sherry tastings. Yeah. We have whiskey tastings, sake tastings. We have do tastings at home. We
try not to do those.
Done kind of online tastings.
Yeah. If you have money, we
have
can
tastings.
Give you alcohol. It's basically the crux of this whole business plan.
Well, it's very interesting because you do mention sake and whiskey and other types of drinks. So I'd be very interested to hear your opinions about fine dining, gastronomy, and these types of drinks as well.
I'm ready for this.
Yeah, because we always think wine, good food, but there's other options as well, isn't there?
I mean, I would say you're not really a whiskey guy.
No.
Most people aren't whiskey people, which I get. Whiskey does not go with most foods on average. Like if you're having like, what's for dinner? I'm gonna make a salmon rice dish. Fancy a bourbon? It's not really a classic go-to, but it can go. I quite like a smoky whiskey with a steak, for example. But I think generally for whiskey, apart from a few with cheeses, you know, these kind of things
work. You could eat your own grandmother.
I mean, if I can get the inheritance, I will. Love you, grandma. but especially sake. So sake is fantastic with food, especially obviously with seafood and all these kind of things. The problem with those two drinks is they usually economically push people out a little bit. So the beauty of Spanish wine specifically, given that we tax it as food,
Viva España,
is you can quite affordably try an array of different styles. I mean, I love whiskey, I love sake. The world of wine is much better for food because there's zillions and billions of different styles. Big fan in the bus. Okay, good. There's loads of different styles of wine. There's not myriad styles of sake comparatively. But they can go with food. I mean, like, we occasionally do sort of pairing tastings if people have asked it to. So if there are any whiskey lovers here, next time you have a hamburger, try it with a bourbon if you really want to. But I would say they're not necessarily gastronomically the easiest to pair. But sometimes people come in, like we have a lot of Americans who are like, I like to have my bourbon with whatever, and they'll tell me something, I'll learn as well. I can't say I usually have my whiskeys with food.
Do you like wine?
Imagine if they said no. Get out of our show.
This is an expose on how terrible wine is.
I'm actually teetotal.
How do you like wine?
Well, it's a good question because I've only really gotten into wine this year.
She's literally laughing.
And one of my friends who recommended your podcast to me, he's been in your shop a few times. And he's been he doesn't like, well, he's gotten us a lot of guests for the podcast. And he doesn't like to be named, but you know who you are, so thank you so much.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'll tell you after.
I'll pay you, I guess. Thank you for sending us.
But he, like, he's really interested in learning, and I want to be on his path as well, because really, I'll be honest up front, my knowledge of wine is literally just red and white.
Sure.
And if they ask me about white wine in a restaurant, it's like, just the sweet one, please. Yeah, thanks. You know, so I think there's a huge culture around wine that I don't know, but I'm very much interested in learning about it. But you are Spanish, Maria, so I don't know if you...
Allegedly.
No pressure. Allegedly, I'm Spanish? No, I am, sorry. I don't know that much either, I must admit, because...
Where are you from in Spain?
León.
Good wines.
Yeah.
Great wines.
But
I'm going there in 3 weeks.
I don't know.
Two wine regions in León.
Tierra de León. In the provincia, you mean? Bierzo.
Of course, yes. So Bierzo is very famous. but yeah, I suppose my family weren't big wine drinkers, so maybe that's why I didn't. And then, I don't know, I got into the beer pretty soon, so.
When did you leave León? As in, were you...
Late 80s.
Who is interviewing who?
This is my show now. Because what would be interesting to see is if your family, when you were young in the house, it would be interesting to see if they were drinking Rioja like everybody, or if they were drinking Preto Picudo Bierzo wines or León wine. It'd be interesting to see what was the house wine.
My father was from Huesca.
Drinking some Somontano stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
wine from Barbastro. I'm sure.
So Barbastro is probably a mixture of that.
Interesting. Get back to us.
A little caveat about
you
Maria.
Want to introduce any idea in this conversation?
I feel like I'm being interviewed.
No, Maria lived for like a number of years in Durham and near Newcastle.
You lived in Durham.
Yeah. So that's where your beer drinking began in earnest, I imagine.
Fair enough, you got a free pass.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay.
But you know, obviously, because you're from England, right? I'm Irish.
He's from Malaga.
Yeah, from Malaga, as you can tell.
Tens accents, yeah. I want to ask you guys about the international cuisine in Madrid, because obviously Spanish food has such a great reputation. But is it easy, in your opinion, to eat other types of cuisine, Japanese cuisine, etc. here?
Yeah.
I mean, right. The last few years, it's gotten better. When I moved here in 2009, it was an absolute car crash. Obviously, my thing is Japanese stuff. I'm one of those.
He loves Japanese.
I love Japan.
Culture.
But I'm not a weeb.
He will die alone. Yeah. So it's not surprising.
But,
so no.
But I'll die in perfect Japanese. Yeah. So there's the Japanese has got a lot better in the last few years. I think Italian is still pretty bad. And you can talk if you want. Yeah. But Italian's still not great. It's not. The thing is, when I go back to the UK, what is nice is even in like a smallish city, it almost seems like every possible country is represented. Like, oh, there's a new Tibetan place has opened. And you're like, they have food in Tibet? That kind of thing. You don't even know. But it's getting better. I don't know. What would you reckon? Is it a good international eating city?
Oh, Madrid.
It's getting better.
Yeah, it's getting better.
Tacos or
whatever. I mean, it's, the thing is that in Spain, the gastronomical culture is so strong.
Yeah.
It's not always easy for an international cuisine to have some room in the Madrilenian stomachs. They opened an Ethiopian restaurant,
really?
Right? Yeah, next to the.
There are a lot of.
There's
like three or four Ethiopian restaurants here.
And it's like, okay. I saw it the other day and I said, oh, this is new. And I'm surprised that I have my concerns about Japanese food.
Yes.
And you know.
I do.
That.
I hate you for it.
But yeah, it's getting more and more easy to get.
Okay, another thing.
International food.
With Madrid is we're very trend based. So it's like when I first came here, hamburgers didn't really exist. It would be like the little taberna had like una hamburguesa mixta. It was like, what is this monstrosity? But then craft gourmet hamburgers became a thing. And now they're you can't move for burger joints. The same thing happened kind of with Japanese food, which is a good thing for me. There's more options. So I think it's almost like when they get their scent, this could be popular, then it explodes, as opposed to being an integral part of, like Rocket said, because Spanish food, I imagine it's the same problem in Italy, because it's such a strong food culture. No one's like, oh, I'm dying for Vietnamese bao. They're like, hey, you know, that's kind of that kind of thing.
Yeah, in Italy, I read the other day, Pizza Hut tries to settle down in Italy, and it was
why would you even do that? They had to quit.
Yeah, there's actually in Plaza Mayor near here, there's a Pizza Hut, which has replaced a place that used to sell empanadas from different Latin American countries and fantastic cakes. I don't know what the connection was between those two things, but now it's been replaced by something that's very homogenous.
Really lovely pizza.
I love to cook. I'm very traditional. I'm not an explorer of international cuisine. You recommended me that Armenian restaurant once or Armenian. Georgian restaurant that I fell in love with a goat for a couple of months. it wasn't far from here.
I think you're having a stroke right now.
Yeah.
Anyway,
hey, maybe you can tell us about that.
I think this might have been a dream.
Maybe it's good. Okay, so, I suppose maybe it's got something to do with immigration as well. Like, maybe perhaps, immigration is quite a recent thing here compared to, I don't know, say, London.
Yeah,
so, there aren't that many communities. Well, that's my theory anyway. I don't know why.
Yeah, like you go to La Vapiers, where I am, and then you find they have their own restaurants, but you find maybe fewer.
There.
People from other, like, you don't get many people from Chambéry going to a Senegalese place in Lavapiés, but I'm like, yes, Senegalese place.
Okay, so that covers the food. So, but we're here to talk about wine. So what do you think you have learned about Spain? Well, obviously for you it's a different question, but maybe look at
what
like
have you
us.
Learned about Spain?
What have you learned, or what does wine tell you about Spain, about different regions of Spain? Do you think it can actually tell you something?
I can tell you about the climate. The Spanish don't love their wine enough. And by that, I mean, if you are in Galicia, if you live in Santiago, you will probably love and drink a lot of your Albariños and your Gadeos.
Mm.
So you get certain areas which are very localized because it's part of their gastronomy, in the same way Valencians never shut up about their prices and stuff, which is cool.
But this is a so close, so far thing. Mm. You know, we are so used to see wine on our table since we are children that we don't see, you know, that wine is something that can be really magical and it can, you know, and it's very appreciated outside of Spain, but we are so used to it. That
it's part of the table.
It's part of the table. I mean, it's there. Yeah. Wine. It's not a social drink. It's not something for, you know.
With casera.
Yeah. Don't get me started.
No, I'm just saying, you know, to clarify why this happened.
Yeah, so.
I mean, Calimocho is pretty tasty, though, to be fair. Put some Coca-Cola with red wine. That's weirdly good.
In Spain, does wine have a connotation? It's elegant. It's intellectual.
No,
I don't know.
Well, maybe it's changing, but like I think traditionally, like you said, it's just part of the gastronomy. Yeah. We tax it as food as well. It's just it's not put on a pedestal like in Italy and France, which I think is a good thing spiritually.
Yeah.
Because it means it is a drink for the masses. Mm. But the masses, I mean, Spain is the number 10 per volume and per capita beer drinking nation on the planet. Wow. Not for wine.
Like an irreverent attitude about wine.
It's very kind of pretentious. Yeah. People see it as very, that's why I think I fell in love with Spain and Spanish wine, because it's much more humble and like real here. Mm. And it's cheaper. So it, by definition, it has created an ambience of it's more of a normal everyday product. But because of that, I think it's not loved as much as like el vino de España. It's like, sí, me gusta un Riojita. Like, I like a Rioja sometimes. Whereas in France, they basically have temples dedicated to their wine.
Yeah.
So I think... I wish, I know, but it is changing. Like
it is changing.
The younger generations are more interested in trying new things.
I don't think I like it's changing, because probably...
I don't want the price to change.
It will be more expensive in the future. The more pretentious, the more humbles. Expensive. Mm.
You always pay a premium for the culture around the drink, no? Rather than the product itself, I imagine.
Yeah, if you can sell it for more, we will kind of buy it.
Because you're buying the lifestyle, aren't you, rather than the actual product. I think I've been dominating the questions so far. Is there anything you want to ask?
No, you haven't. Okay, this is a very stupid thing, but it just came to mind.
I love that kind of introduction.
Stupid question, that's for Luke.
Which one of you is the English guy?
very lovely. Not quite as stupid.
Working, we're not.
I don't know if you remember where there was a movie with Meg Ryan, and I'm talking about maybe the 90s.
You've Got Mail?
That one. But anyway, she falls in love with a French guy that, sort of tells her about all the wine and all that. And then she does like this blindfolded wine tasting where she has to describe, you know, what it's like.
Mm.
And this is like fruity, like, you know, I don't know, a sunrise in whatever. Okay, so my question is, because I don't know, we were talking about this and it made me think of that scene. And then he was like fascinated. Oh, wow, you describe so well. And you know, it was very poetic. But you know, do you really believe in that sort of, you know, kind of like probably pretentious description?
To a point.
No.
Luke is a real pretentious asshole. He grabs the glass and says, "Oh, coconut. A little bit of tennis balls."
No, never said that.
He has a real talent. I'm pretty sure he has more talents, but this is the boomer.
After the podcast, we'll show you the real talent.
And but yeah, he. Once you get into the wine world, you easily fall in these little, you know, things of finally describing the wine like tennis balls. Because it's true. The thing is that it's true. But you need to, you know, spend a lot of time drinking like we have done.
Mm-hmm.
But
today.
Already.
But he has that talent. I don't. Basically, I mean, I'm more basic.
You're like red.
No, well, fruits. At the beginning, remember, I describe the wine, the smells of the wine, for example, inventing words, or, you know, just dropping abstract words like, oh, this wine is very eclectic.
And you say it with confidence.
Which actually, it works as well. But especially if you are, you know, with the appropriate audience. But Luke is very good at that.
If I could defend myself briefly.
Sure.
No, so it is most, it's all nonsense.
Okay.
Beautiful nonsense. So we always say, on our, I mean, I like to find things, and I think I've got quite an active nose. So I can, I guess I can, it reminds me of things more. But
I have a passive nose.
You have a very lazy nose. The problem is, I think people, it's when they think it's true in a sense that there's nothing in here apart from grapes, okay?
Mm.
So we always tell people on our tastings, we say it like, con cariño, with love. Neither of us, nor the winemakers, care what you smell. If you get something, you get something, that's great. It doesn't matter. So it's usually really about, is the wine, does it have a problem? Is there a mistake? And if it reminds you of something, great. And I take enjoyment, because I'm a pretentious asshole, in trying to be, oh, what does it remind me? What do I get? But if, my mum hates this part. So she always says, she can't swirl it. So she kind of jiggles the glass. And she goes, it smells of wine.
Weird tsunami.
Yeah, weird tsunami. Just smells of wine. Do you like it? Oh, it's lovely. Would you buy it? And she goes, probably. That's what is most important. But there is this insane avalanche of pretentiousness in the wine world. We always say, never let anyone tell you what you smell. If you just smell red wine and you like it, that's fine. But if it does remind you of your mum's raspberry jam, that's also beautiful.
Yeah.
But yeah, I am.
And don't let anyone to tell you which wine you should like.
Yeah.
I mean, if you like the €2 wine in the supermarket, you are the luckiest person.
We probably won't allow you in our shop. Yeah.
It seems like it's very important, however, even if you can't detect it, or maybe you can, it's performative in the way that there's a ceremony around Japanese tea.
Mm.
And by doing it, maybe it tastes better, because scientifically or psychologically, if you tap your food, like you have a piece of bread, you tap it on your plate or the table, it's meant to actually taste better in your mind. There's some relationship between doing
that.
So
try that without roast chicken.
Tap, tap. And we're very conscious of your lunch, so don't worry. We're almost there.
We talk a lot. Sorry.
No, it's fantastic. We're going to wrap up soon, but I want to ask you, look, just one question, because I know you have traveled and you've written books about the Camino and things like that. So maybe it's for both of you, this question, but right now you're in Madrid, of course, but literally and figuratively, are you ever thinking of opening up shop in another country and completely migrating somewhere else?
I mean, I don't think we don't want to leave Madrid, but I think our... it's very sweet. We get a lot of people on our tastings who are Americans. This
plans,
would work so well.
We have plans to open our another Madrid and Daraka in Kiev.
Yeah.
We had to cancel that. No, sorry, I'm kidding.
This is why we're going to get cancelled, Rogan. But like, for example, this concept, okay, Americans love this place. Like, oh my God, if we had this in New York, this would work amazingly. So it could work. I think the next logical step for us would be, I mean, you can see it, it would be some kind of our little own version of a wine bar with some food, and we choose the wines. And then from there, I don't think we want to leave Madrid just now. But if someone said, I'll give you £1 billion to franchise out in Valencia, I'd be like, okay, you can open a Madrid and Daraka there, take that. But we'd like it. It's not because of our egos, which are already big enough, but it's more that we like the idea of the BS-free concept moving around. Because the problem is, I think the wine world can be quite intimidating, and a lot of wine shops can be. So if we can get this around, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
But as long as people are just tasting Spanish wines, because of us, that's the main thing.
As long as we keep the philosophy that it's just wine, it's just grapes, it's just... Yeah.
And just finally, you're multi-talented. You have, as we mentioned before, podcast, YouTube channel, all these things. Which is more gratifying for you guys in expressing and sharing your love for a wine? Is it the video aspect you really enjoy, or the podcast you can... Because it's completely aural, maybe it comes alive more. What's more gratifying?
For me, it's the teaching side. So I love when we have if you get a really good group, you have a room full of 20 people and they laugh at your jokes. That's always. But when they have a great time and they fall in love with Spanish wines and they all leave, it's the best thing we did at the holiday. That really is like, that's so beautiful. So I love the teaching side.
I love when people suddenly understand what wine is, and they understand why we look at the wine, why we smell it, why, and when they, you know, get into that ritual, and they understand what's happening. That's, for me, it's done. It's okay. It's worth.
Mm. I mean, the podcast is more like rest and relaxation
yeah.
for us. We're like, all right, the shop is closed. Let's drink. But it's kind of fun as well. Also, another thing we like to do, just the last thing we do, is winery visits.
Okay.
And that fills me with a lot of pride, because
yeah.
it's a lot of organisation. And when you get to take people to like a local Madrid winery, and they're like, this is so great, you're like, yes. That, it's that kind of sense of victory,
yep.
which is quite cool.
Have you ever been asked a silly question? I guess there's no such thing as a silly question, but
We love silly questions.
Because on one of our tours, we might have mentioned this in a previous podcast, but we do a tour about the Irish people in Madrid who came to Spain under Felipe Segundo and Felipe III. And one of our first tours, two women asked us how.
Where is Ireland?
Well, almost as bad. Oh, it was God. Like, how did the Irish get here? Was it by Ryanair? And this is, of course, the 1700s.
It was Ryan boat.
Very slow and very inefficient. But
I think we're quite lucky that I think a lot of people have questions about wine, but they're rarely stupid. They think that, like, stupid question, but, like, what are tannins? You know, it's not a stupid question. I don't think we get many stupid questions, I think. We get, like, silly comments, but not people. Most of the questions aren't stupid, I don't think.
No, they're not. I mean, it's...
The worst I've had is, are you Australian? I'm like,
how dare you?
That's a stupid question. I have the most horribly English accent ever. Apart from that, no, I don't think we get many stupid questions. I mean, I'm sure we have, but are not classic. Yeah, mate.
Well, Rocky, sorry.
he loves calling Rocky.
And Luke, it's honestly been an absolute pleasure for both of us to drink with you, learn from you, and feel your passion as well.
Yes, thank you so much. You're our great. Pleasure.
Thank you.
Final cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. I am.
Thank you.